A Saturday, November 9th, 2019, that will not soon ever be forgotten. The LSU Tigers' fourth win over a top-10 team in grand fashion, snapping an eight-game skid against Alabama, ending the Crimson Tide's 31-game home winning streak with a 46-41 victory. For reference, LSU scored just 39 points in its past five meetings with Alabama. A Heisman Trophy bid and a story of a young man who just didn't listen to all the critics and all the skeptics, as the same for his coach. Oh, what a day it was, and we'll recap it all today, Monday, Veterans Day, November the 11th, 2019.
Scoring in the pylon, and the Atlanta touchdown for Brian Hill, the last guy in the package.
First thing I would say is give Atlanta credit. They beat us well in all three areas, played better than us. I mean, you pick a situation, and there's a good chance they won that situation. Third down, they were better. Both sides of the ball. Penalties, they were better. So collectively, we've got to do a better job. That starts with me. And, you know, it's kind of one of those, it's not a lesson, but this league is too good week to week.
You know, for them to get after him in the pass game and to play good secondary defense is, you know, critical for us. That's going to be huge for us moving forward.
Happy Monday, happy Veterans Day, and a salute to all those past, present, and future who serve our great country so that everyone else can live in the freedom that we enjoy each and every day. Happy Veterans Day and good afternoon to one and all. CD back in the Master Control Suite in the ShopRite Tobacco Plus, in the 237 Roof Studios on the campus of Delta Media, which houses KLWB and 103.7 The Game. It was a great weekend in the state of Louisiana. Everybody won except for the New Orleans Saints. And each and every year, the Saints have a clunker, and hopefully that was their one and only clunker, and that's all we're going to say about it. Because this day is all about LSU football. A record-setting night. A night, November the 9th, 2019, the night that LSU exercised its demons. Our producer extraordinaire, Clint Domain, put it all together in sounds and music. Enjoy.
We're coming. We're coming. And we ain't backing down.
Never look back, no, never say die. Always attack with the warrior.
Choose whatever poll you would like, the AP, the coaches, or the College Football Committee playoff rankings. Suffice to say, today's game features the two best teams and some of the finest coaches and players in all of the land. Both come in 8-0 on the season, Alabama 5-0 in the SEC, while LSU stands with a 4-0 conference mark. Division, conference, and national title implications on the line once again. Snap back to Tagovailoa. He's going to have to run for it to the right side of the field. Lost the football. Going to be picked up by the Tigers at the 9-yard line. Big turnover by the Crimson Tide. Ray Thornton falls on it. He secures the football for LSU in Alabama. Their opening drive with so much promise is thwarted with a turnover. Burrow throwing far side and going to be grabbed by Chase at about the three. He'll step into the end zone by his lonesome. Touchdown, Tigers! That time on coverage for Alabama was Trayvon Diggs. He saw the football but then kind of stumbled, fell out of the way, and Ja'Marr Chase just went up, pulled it down. He goes into the end zone untouched. We'll set up third down and about three here for LSU, and they immediately hop up. Lloyd Cushenberry puts his nose over the football. They're trying to convert on third and two. Justin Jefferson in the backfield with Burrow. He's looking to throw as a man wide open at the 20. Racing into the end zone. Terrace Marshall left wide open. Nobody had him around the 15-yard line. He made the catch, looked around, said, I'm by my lonesome, and I'll take it on in for the score. Third down, goal to go from the one. Caught Edwards-Helaire with a handoff. Goes airborne into the end zone. Touchdown, Tigers! Burrow came into today's game on the season with a very impressive 2,800 yards. Here's an interception on first down and 10, taken at the 42-yard line by Patrick Queen. Queen down the far side hash, going to be stood up at the 25-yard line. Flags come out everywhere after the play is halted. Tagovailoa on first down and 10 came out through towards the far side hash, and Queen, really the only person in the vicinity, almost seemed shocked the ball was bearing down on him, but he holds on and picks off Tagovailoa, just his third interception offered up this year. It'll be first down and 10. Ball placed at the Alabama 13-yard line with 11 seconds to go in the second quarter. Burrow in the shotgun. Clyde Edwards-Helaire on a wing to his left. Burrow looking left. Delivers the football. Clyde Edwards-Helaire got in the left corner. Touchdown, Tigers! First down, pass play, score! Ball just inside the 7-yard line. First down, goal to go for the Fighting Tigers. Snap to Burrow. Hand to Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Goes near side. Stiff arms a man. Gets to the five. Breaks through. Stays upright. Into the end zone. Touchdown, Tigers! Clyde Edwards-Helaire wanted it more than anybody in crimson and white. And he drove the Crimson Tide into the end zone to make it 45-34, Fighting Tigers of LSU. Burrow under center. Takes the snap. Takes the knee, and the LSU Fighting Tigers come to Tuscaloosa, and for the first time in 8 seasons, hand Nick Saban and the Alabama Crimson Tide a loss here at Bryant-Denny. Coach Ed Ogeron said a couple of years ago, the Tigers were coming. Today, they arrive.
Watch, but what was this one like to coach?
You know what? It's a great game to be in, a great rivalry. I am so happy for the state of Louisiana and all the LSU fans and our football team and our coaching staff. They worked very hard for this victory. It's a much-deserved victory for our football team and our great state of Louisiana and our great university in LSU.
Moment, man. Let's go. Right here in the middle of the field. Let's bring it down, Tigers on three, baby. Because this is our house from now on.
Yes, sir.
Tigers on three. 1, 2, 3.
Tigers! Oh! Oh!
All right.
Wow. So well done by my producer, Clint Domain. Outstanding job. It is the night that LSU arrived, and LSU's 46 points were the most by an Alabama opponent in Bryant-Denny Stadium in history. In history. The last time Alabama gave up more at home was back in 1907 versus Sewanee. Oh, what a difference it makes. And don't you just love, I am so happy for Ed Ogeron. He's the right man at the right time in the right place. He is one of us. And this LSU football team has bigger goals in mind. It was a great win the night, November the 9th, that LSU exercised its demons. Now, once and for all, we can get past that. Up next, Ole Miss, 6 p.m. in Oxford. Then back home the following Saturday as Arkansas comes to town with an interim head coach as the Hogs fired Chad Morris. That game as well, a 6 p.m. kickoff. Lots of football left to be played, but oh, what a special time it was. And as an LSU former athlete who's been in those buildings and been around that program, it is a special, special, special moment. Much more to talk about with this ball game. Brooks Cabina of The Advocate will join us next, followed by Billy Embody of Go247 Sports, as the Tigers already reaping the benefits yet again over the win as they land yet another big, big prize in the recruiting ranks. We'll talk all about that in this hour. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show. How about that? We'll be back. Stay with us.
The Blonde Bomber is back, and better than ever, as you're locked into the Jordy Helfrich Show on 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
Oh, we can still revel in the win. LSU has to turn that page and get ready for Ole Miss, but Joe Burrow with 457 total yards versus Alabama, the third highest in program history. And Clyde Edwards-Helaire with 199 all-purpose yards and four touchdowns. Today, the SEC named them co-offensive players of the week after that 46-41 win over Alabama. Brooks Cabina of The Advocate was there up close and personal. It seemed to me, Brooks, that years and years of frustration and anger were released, and that was quite the celebration on the field after the game, man. How are you?
Well, you know, it sounds like you've been queuing up that lead-in music for about 8 years, so it seems you're a little excited.
That's right.
But I got down on the field just in time on Saturday night to see Joe Burrow get lifted by his teammates, Ja'Cory Savage and Tyler Shelvin. Each had him on one shoulder, and they carried him a good portion of the way off the field. And I mean, that's the emotion. I mean, this entire team was so thrilled to pull off that win in Bryant-Denny Stadium, where offenses go to die. I mean, they had given up so few points at home. They had lost since 2015. These were all things that we all wrote and have talked about for years and years. And Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I mean, Ed Ogeron talked about him this morning. He said in his 35 years of coaching, he probably has not seen an individual performance like that before. Comparing him to Reggie Bush, you know, to others that he's coached over time, he can't remember a player pulling out and playing out the way that he did. And, I mean, just talking about some of these plays are things that fans are going to talk about for years, things that, you know, you almost would think would only be in movies. Like whenever Alabama cut it to one score and Alabama sent the house on a third down and almost got to Joe Burrow, and he released the pass just in time, and Edwards-Helaire caught it by the fingertips before it hit the ground, and he still had like nine yards to go on the sideline, and he ducked his head and willed his way for a first down. Things like that. And then, you know, even whenever the game wasn't over, on that next drive, he ran up the middle and had looked like he had been stopped for 2 yards, and then the offensive line gathered around him, and then they shoved him for a first down, and they were able to, you know, take the knee. You know, it's just there was so much heart and grit in this game, just evident on the playing field. And, you know, watching Edwards-Helaire bury his head into his dad's shoulder on the sideline just couldn't contain the emotion. I mean, you can tell how much this meant to the team on the field, off the field, in any capacity as it went throughout the weekend. And it's very, very evident what this means to the team, to the coaches, to the fans, to the state of Louisiana. I mean, this has been something long, long time in the waiting, and it was, you know, it's never about any of the reporters, but it's a privilege to cover something that means that much to that many people.
No question. Brooks Cabina of The Advocate. I've got to give Alabama a lot of credit. They don't roll over and die. They keep fighting. You gotta play till the final whistle blows to beat these guys. But there was a 90-second span, I thought, that encapsulated the entirety of the game. It was right before the half when Edwards-Helaire jumped over like Sam Bam Cunningham back in the USC Trojan days. That was a guy that was about 6'6". He's only about 5'7". Big difference, but he still got the job done. Then you have the interception, and then with 11 seconds to go in the first half, you find Edwards-Helaire on the kind of a wheel route in the end zone for a touchdown. Two quick scores, a turnover. Man, that was about as good as it gets.
Yes. Edwards-Helaire had so many big plays. You talked about the dive. How about the spike after that? You could tell his emotions were ramped up.
Oh, that was awesome.
And from the very first drive, Edwards-Helaire on the second play of the game spun out of a tackle and went for 8 yards. I mean, how many spin moves did this guy have throughout the game? The touchdown that when LSU and Alabama drew to one score in the second half and they were down near the goal line and he went off the left edge and it looked like it was closed off and he spun out and walked into the end zone. I mean, he just put on so much tape for him. I don't know how much money he won on Saturday night as a pro football player, but he won so much respect from everyone on that night for him. And I mean, there was Joe Burrow played so well, and we could talk about him as well, but I mean that they shared the stage that night, and it was fitting that both of them shared the weekly honor as SEC Players of the Week.
We're used to Burrow doing what he does. It's almost become commonplace, but he wrapped up, unless something catastrophic happens, he wrapped up the Heisman Trophy, didn't he?
It's his to lose at this point. Voter, I do vote for the Heisman Trophy. Last year I voted. This year I'll vote again. It's one of those moments that, you know, you can tell that Joe Burrow meant so much to this offense. He's the reason why they were able to commit to the ways that they did. We've seen him ball out in the big games, Texas, Auburn, Florida, Alabama now. I mean, he went toe-to-toe with the other Heisman hopeful, Tua Tagovailoa, and won when the game was counted. I mean, we talked about Edwards-Helaire's plays of showing toughness and powering through. There were multiple times when Burrow was in the backfield and broke out of a sack. I mean, he was sacked 5 times by Alabama. They sent and pressured him, but he got his too.
Yes,
he was able to check out a place, and there were some third downs where he called an RPO himself and took it up the middle and got a big first down with his legs. I mean, the touchdown to Clyde Edwards-Helaire right before the first half, I mean, he got drilled after he threw that ball. He knew he was going to get his hits. He knew he was going to be pressured. He made the biggest plays in the biggest game of the season. That's something that nobody else in the country has done thus far, and that's why I'm saying it's his to lose at this point.
I'm with you. Brooks Cabina, well said, of The Advocate. I remember one play with Burrow where it was like a quarterback draw, but he stopped and got those linebackers to come up, and Ja'Marr Chase was wide open middle of the field, and it was just an absolute beautiful, beautiful play. He just has the whole – he's got everything you want in a quarterback. Accuracy off the charts. I don't care if he throws the ball 80 yards or just 20 yards. He throws it where people catch the darn football. He's tough. He gets you in the right plays. I'm amazed that – it looked like Rudy Rudiger out there getting carried. When's the last time an LSU football player got carried off the field? My goodness.
Cole Tracy last year, Auburn.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah, and I mean,
you're
the way
right.
that he,
you're right.
The way that Joe Burrow played, this is what last week, and this ran in the story on Saturday. This offense was built to put Burrow in positions where he can play his best. I got a chance to talk with Zach Streif, longtime Saints offensive tackle, to talk mm-hmm. about the Saints' influence in this offense. And really, it's critical thinking. And yes, it's a spread system. It's the West Coast system. A lot of people run this. The difference is learning how to construct the offense around the players that gets the most out of them. Joe Burrow is a downfield passer. That's where he excels. He is able to throw those on a dime. He knows how to read coverages in that capacity. He knows how to get balls off quickly to the near side. You know, you want to give him opportunities where he can use those strengths. And not only that, being flexible enough to adapt in a game when Alabama is presenting different looks. I remember this, and this got pointed out by Cole Kubelik in the middle of the game. Whenever it might have been the very first drive or the second, you know, they were rotating Edwards-Helaire outside, inside. They got him on the far side edge as a receiver, and a linebacker went out to the sideline to cover him. And that was a signal to LSU that they were in man coverage. And, you know, they did mm-hmm. it again. And they set up this play to where Edwards-Helaire cut inside and essentially picked Jamar Chase's defensive back from the slot position. And he went out to the sideline and was wide open for a pinpoint accurate pass on the sideline. And there was a safety closing. That's where Joe Burrow's effectiveness is. He can make that throw. And all of those things came together in that kind of play. And there were several times and instances throughout this game where you saw the strengths of LSU's offenses coming out on plays that were built for them.
No question. Quite a night at Bryant-Denny Stadium. Brooks was there. He's writing all about it. He'll continue to do it as LSU leads up to Ole Miss in Oxford. Boy, that's a night you won't forget, my friend. So thanks for sharing some thoughts about it, and we greatly appreciate it as always.
All right, as always, man. Thanks for having me on.
All right, that's Brooks Cabina of The Advocate. So you win on the field at Orgeron after the game, got it out there, and it went viral, and one of his players never should have done this. But he talked about, we're going to beat him in recruiting. We're going to beat him every time we see him. And Roll Tide, beep you. We're going to talk about recruiting because it keeps getting better and better, and decisions need to be made. They have too many. They have too many. Oh, Tigers on top of the college football world. Billy Embody next.
There's only one place you'll find all the movers, shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
Yes, the streak has been broken. The tide has been turned. The Heisman-like performance of Joe Burrow. The career night of Clyde Edwards-Helaire. The first time Bama was beaten at home in 32 games. The first time a team, LSU, has earned 4 wins over top 10 opponents since 1987. And the first time LSU has begun the season 9-0 since 2011. Most importantly, puts LSU in the driver's seat to win the SEC West. They're number one in the writers' poll. They're number one in the coaches' poll. And they should be number one in the college football playoff poll that comes out tomorrow night. But they also are winning on the recruiting path as well. And to talk about that and all the events that transpired over the weekend is our good friend Billy Embody of Go247 Sports. First, Billy, I gotta before we get down, thank you for your time. Before we get down into the recruiting aspect, you've been around this town and around this team and around this this feeling. Give me your thoughts and your feelings after that win.
Yeah, I think Ed Orgeron pretty much nailed it. And he was talking about when he goes to the store to get a Red Bull or whatever, he doesn't have to hear about, hey, coach, you gotta beat those guys because they've beat them and they've done it now. And that really is, I mean, what it's all about. And we've talked about it throughout the year. While the start to the season has been great and everything like that, you know, beating Texas, beating Auburn, beating Florida, if you're an LSU fan, you had November 9th circled on your calendar and how that game was going to play out with Alabama. And they go into Tuscaloosa, and I said this, I do believe that LSU probably would have won, whether in Baton Rouge or Tuscaloosa, but I think to get over the hump, it was better that it was away from maybe the distractions of a college game day in Baton Rouge, or having all your friends and family want tickets, or all of those things. And it just worked out really, really well for them. I mean, you know, a win is a win in that series, and they certainly went out and got it. And you know, for the most part, in the first half especially, they did it in a dominating fashion. And throughout the game, they were dominant offensively. So, I mean, you couldn't have scripted it for LSU any better. The fast start and all those things that ended up playing out. You beat Bama for the first time since 2011. It's all good.
It's all good. An unbelievable scene after the game with some LSU football players running down the field to the end zone, to the Alabama recruiting section, and, you know, kind of letting them know, hey, we're here. We love it here. Come join us. That was pretty darn cool.
Yeah, and Marcel Brooks leading the way. I know Grant Delpit and some of the other guys came over, but that's who kind of Marcel is as a person, and he was as a recruit. Whenever something happened on the recruiting trail, or whenever they were recruiting other players, Marcel was kind of at the center of it. He was always recruiting others to LSU, and I thought that was great awareness to kind of have that in that moment, know where the recruits were for Alabama. I think Marcel took a visit there as a recruit, but I know he took one there as a recruit for a game. But so to have that awareness of where to go see what was a star-studded group in Tuscaloosa was pretty impressive.
And shortly right after the game, recruits began taking to Twitter to share their thoughts. Five-star cornerback Elias Ricks out of California wrote that he's officially shutting down his recruitment after seeing that performance. And Kayshon Boutte, who kind of 50-50, right, between LSU and Bama just a week ago, said he's proud to be a Tiger. So I guess beating Alabama was like the single most important thing to do to beat Alabama in recruiting.
Yeah, it was. And Ed Ogeron and his staff have done a great job recruiting and recruiting without a win over Alabama and just where they were entering that game. But now you don't have that cloud, that question mark hanging over the head of the program. And it's real. And no matter how good they were offensively this year, no matter how high they climbed in the polls, if they lost to Alabama, that question would still remain. And now it doesn't. And even if, let's say, Bama does get into the college football playoff, LSU still has that. You know, hey, we've beaten Alabama, and that's something that Ed Ogeron and his staff can use, and they couldn't use it before.
We're talking with Billy Embody of Go247 Sports, and then it just got better because the morning after the Tigers beat Bama on the field, the Tigers beat them on the recruiting trail with defensive tackle Jacobian Guillory of Alexandria Senior High committing to LSU. I know it's a huge get, but sum it up for me.
Yeah, Jacobian is a big nose tackle, 6'2", 330. He's a big guy, but he doesn't look like 330 pounds like maybe a Tyler Shelvin or a Siaki Aika did when they were at that weight. He's a state champion power lifter, so he is somebody that takes his time in the weight room very seriously. And Ed Ogeron's always talked about getting longer in the trenches, getting more physical, getting bigger, all of those things. And Jacobian was at the top of their list on the remaining defensive line targets, and somebody that I think we've all kind of had pegged for LSU for a while now. But the expectation was for him to go into January and then announce that commitment at the All-American Bowl in January. And he said, you know what, I've been silently committed for about a month now, and with that win over Alabama, I'm just going to go ahead and make this thing official and end all the questions. So it kind of shocked me a little bit, just because his plan had been to wait. But I think everybody kind of knew he was going to end up a Tiger. It was just kind of a matter of when.
Where does his announcement put LSU in the national rankings, just out of curiosity?
Yeah, they're sitting at number two. They're about like a tenth or a 20th of a point away from catching Clemson with the number one class. So they're poised to make a push for it. And and finish with a number one class potentially.
I know Coach O and his staff know what's going on. How many commit? Is this 25? Are they at their limit right here, right now? If everything had to stop here and everybody that they had commitments from signed up, is that where we are now?
Yeah, it's right now they're full technically, but obviously they can take more verbal right. commitments and do all of those things. And you'll see some guys kind of either bow out of the class or mutual parting of ways and things like that, because they have some mm-hmm. big targets left on the board that they're in a good spot for. So you will see some shifting, and don't be surprised if somebody backs off a commitment or anything like that.
How many backoffs do you anticipate? Because I've got to imagine that there's some people, some high profile recruits out there that are, if they were on the fence or LSU was maybe fourth on their list, maybe they're thinking, "Ooh, I don't know. How many do you think are going to change their mind or be told thank you but no thank you?"
I think it could be anywhere from 2 to 4. I think right now, and that's just kind of a guess. I wouldn't have mm-hmm. kind of a list for you of who could be that player.
Right.
I've just never been kind of fond of doing that because you never know how things work
right.
out. They could go just different directions. But I think when you do see people back off, I think you got to take it with a grain of salt that it's probably been more of a mutual thing.
Absolutely. Billy Embody, go 247 Sports. You know, I look at, and I know Nick very well, and I know his strengths. I know he's a great developer of talent, and I know he gets people to the NFL. But you got to love Ed Orgeron. I mean, he's got to be – parents have got to love what that man brings to a game and his emotion. And when he gave that post-game speech about for the state of Louisiana and the tears started coming down, I mean, my goodness gracious, how do you not want to play for that man?
Yeah, he is riding on cloud nine right now, and you know they're two. They couldn't be two more different guys. I think in terms of how they approach things, I think Nick is mm-hmm. definitely somebody that approaches it as a business, which it is, and treats it as a NFL type of organization, which to an extent it also is, and so is LSU. But just the way Ed handles everything from these coaches' decisions to not play guys in games and keeping things in house, or how he praises so many of his players, and you could tell he's a true players coach just the way you see these young men responding to him. I mean, that's what it's all about, and they're doing a great job in every aspect right now, and I think it's only going to get better.
He is Billy Embody of Go247 Sports. Does this season have a direct impact on this recruiting class, or is it going to be more so for the class of 21 and the class of 22? How do you balance that scale?
Yeah, I think it has an impact on the guys that they could finish with, and from Zach Evans, the number one running back in the country, to Marcus Dumervil, one of the top offensive tackles left. We've seen Art Gilbert commit, the five-star tight end, which I think is a direct reflection of the season they're having this year. But mm-hmm. you'll see the 21 class be, I would think, probably as impressive, if not more, than this one. And that's going to be a product of just the level they're recruiting at and also the season that they're having, because they have more time now with a season like this to tee up those guys that maybe they wouldn't have strongly considered LSU, but now they're going to even consider them more closely. I was texting with a couple of really high-profile five stars from just out of state across the country guys, and uh-huh. and they're taking notice, and it's going to pay off for LSU, I think.
Billy, I've got to believe. I don't know the quarterbacks that LSU has in this class. I don't know anything about them, and that's your job. But I've got to believe with this offense and the freedom that Joe Burrow has, and he's a rarity. I understand that. But I've got to believe LSU's going to start getting calls from some of the elite quarterbacks, I would think.
Yeah, I think that's something you'll see in the 2021 class. They've got T.J. Finley and Max Johnson pretty locked in with 2020, and I think 21 is the class where you're going to see that. They've had a really good run on quarterbacks visiting and camping over the last two summers that are in this class. They've probably had most of the guys they've offered on campus the last two summers, and I'd expect them to be back again this summer, but you'll probably see one, maybe two of them, but most likely one of them back as a commit in this case. And that, I think, would probably be wrapped up, you know, more in January, February, maybe March. But I think LSU is going to become one of those schools that gets a quarterback commit early, and it's going to be a really high-profile guy that they – And that they feel like they can ride with, and certainly from a national perspective, other elite playmakers feel like they can ride with as well.
Thus, the impact of all the reports about LSU close to, if not already behind the scenes, making sure that Joe Brady goes nowhere by maybe doubling, maybe tripling his salary right here, right now. That's got to be part of the recruiting process. Look, he's not going anywhere. He's going to coach up your quarterback. He's going to put you in this offense. It's all part of the puzzle, correct?
Yeah, and I was talking with really elite quarterback Ty Simpson, who's in the 2022 class, and he's already a top 50 prospect, number, I think, two quarterback in the country. And he was telling me, I mean, look, this is big. Great players are going to want to play in this offense, and I don't necessarily think at the quarterback position that was said before this year. And it's catching on early, and that's the big thing with quarterbacks, especially, is if you get them on early and you get them buying in and committing, then they're going to be able to sell this offense with a future and say, hey, here's the guy you're going to be playing with. You know, here's this nationally known elite quarterback that we've got committed, and I think LSU is going to become that school, which they haven't been in the past. I mean, you look at Ohio State, you look at Georgia, you look at Michigan or wherever you kind of look around, Alabama, some of these other schools mm-hmm. around the country that have traditionally signed those elite guys, LSU's going to be right in the mix mm-hmm. for most of them.
And yet the story of the game, one of the big stories of the game, was the smallest player on the field. What do you remember about Clyde Edwards-Helaire coming out of high school? What was he ranked? He seemed like he was an afterthought.
Yeah, you know, Clyde was a three-star prospect, high three-star prospect. And here's the thing about Clyde, and people get mad about sometimes recruiting rankings and ranking great athletes at a certain stature because they're great athletes. Uh-huh. But if we would have ranked Clyde where he was as an athlete, he probably would have been a solid four-star prospect and things like that. But you know, Clyde took over for Darius Geis and certainly was a great player at Catholic, but played at, you know, Catholic and probably didn't get enough credit for the production and skill that he had. But Clyde is a 4.45 guy, 40-inch vertical. I mean, now he's a man, and he squats 700 pounds. But when you look at all of that, you know, size, certainly height, really, I think he got penalized for. And it's something that, as a recruiting mm-hmm. industry, you got to look at more and more. But when you look at Clyde, I mean, to be quite frank, he's a better athlete than Darius Geis, than Leonard Fournette, and I mean, it shows. When you look at all the 40s and the vertical and the shuttles and all those things, that's just how it goes. And so I think when people just look at athletes and why they're starting to become higher and higher ranked because they're great athletes, that's because so many times the recruiting industry has been proven wrong by great athletes ending up being exactly that at the college level, because you know you can look at somebody who tallies 100 tackles in high school ranks and runs a 4.7. Well, he's got a lot of heart or whatever. But in reality, the college game isn't as much about that. It's about having great athletes that are productive. And you know, the guy who maybe had 60 tackles as a senior and runs a 4.45 is probably going to be a better college football player. And so it's something that I think we're doing a pretty good job at correcting. We're looking at a lot of the trends in the NFL mm-hmm. draft and the way Clyde's playing. I mean, he's going to prove why that trend that we're seeing and why we're ranking better athletes higher than maybe the better high school football player is becoming a gotcha. Thing more than anything.
That wasn't a knock on recruiting services in any way, shape, or form. It's how you develop, how you believe, how you keep. And he certainly did to Alabama what Leonard Fournette and Darius Geis never could do. And shout out to Clyde Edwards-Helaire and seeing him with his running back coach and then seeing him with his dad. It was just a special moment. But, again, I keep asking, it just seems to me, I know the early signing period's coming up. It's right around the corner. They may have this thing locked up because players are going to say, if I don't sign now, I'm not going to have the chance to play for that coach and that offense and that team. I better sign on the dotted line now or there may not be a spot for me.
Yeah, and I think you'll see – I think LSU and a lot of schools are going to do a good job of having two guys, two, three guys that don't sign early, that they say, okay, all right, you're good to sign in February. If you want to sign in February on the big national sign day, go ahead. And that's not to say that they're not going to have a spot, but it's just to give them flexibility because you know, there are a lot of good players out there that are going to take visits in January and you know, that last weekend before national sign day, and you don't want to be filled up with all 25 of your signees being already done if you've got a chance to land one of those elite difference makers that have, you know, traditionally been, I think, the difference in that LSU-Alabama game in the past. They've got to it doesn't just stop with one win. They've got to continue to reload and get those elite guys. And now that they have that win, they can go get some of those elite guys that maybe Bama has beaten them on in the past. And that takes having some flexibility in the late signing period, too.
Well, Billy, thank you so much. It just keeps rolling up aces for the Tigers right here and now. And thank you for your time as always, my friend.
Anytime. They've got it rolling, that's for sure.
No question. Billy Embody, go to 47 Sports, wrapping up our number one next. But, oh, before we go any further, don't you dare forget the station that keeps on giving and giving and giving. Look, there's two home games left on the LSU football schedule. And with the Tigers being the number one team in the country, 103.7 The Game wants you to be a part of their march to a possible national title. We're going to give you a chance to win two tickets to the final two games in Death Valley. You can score a pair of tickets to the November 23rd game against the Arkansas Razorbacks or tickets to the November 30th game against the Aggies of A&M. We're giving them both away through the 103.7 The Game clubhouse. So go choose your game. Enter to win at 1037thegame.com and cheer on the Tigers to victory in person. As we know, the Arkansas game is going to be at 6 p.m. I've got to believe the A&M game is going to be a night game as well. So here's your chance. 1037thegame.com. Go in the clubhouse. Get you a pair. What a team. We'll be back to wrap up our number one next.
You're listening to the Jordy Holtberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station 1037 The Game. Want to get in on the action? Call us up on the Ardco Equipment Hotline at 337-706-0111.
All right, as we wrap up our number one, look, LSU scored 46 points and needed all of them. It was really, you got to tip your hat to Alabama. You got to tip your hat to Tua Tagovailoa with that surgically repaired ankle. Completed 21 of 40 passes for 418 yards and four touchdowns with an interception. But he was outplayed by Joe Burrow. Clyde Edwards-Helaire ran for 103, caught nine passes for 77, four touchdowns. Jamar Chase, six catches, a buck 40 and a touchdown. Easy to find some fault with the defense in the second half, but it was a monumental win, and the streak is over. LSU has finally conquered its monster, and it was a sight to behold at the game's end. So LSU is unquestionably the number one team in the nation. They've beaten four top 10 teams when they played them this season. No one else's resume is even close to it. And a tip of the hat to Ed Orgeron. What a job he has done. What a job he has done. Now it's time to finish off the regular season. He gets to go back to Oxford where things did not go well for him. And he says he is thankful for that opportunity and he learned so much. And it's time to finish off the Rebs Saturday evening. Our number one is done. Our number two straight ahead, the Jordy Helpert Show on Acadiana's number one sports station and your source for all LSU sports. 103.7 The Game. 1037thegame.com. Oh, baby! What a win.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pulled off another miracle!
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Oh, hour number two of two, and away we go on this very special day in our history. It is Veterans Day, and again, to all those in the past, in the present, and in the future that put themselves in harm's way to serve our country so that we, back in this great United States of America, can live freely and openly. We greatly thank you, and we appreciate you, and boy, thank you for all you have done, continue to do, and will do in the future. You deserve a tip of the cap from all of us, so thank you very, very much. Coming up on the program this hour, it's the only school, only team in our state that lost over the weekend. We'll recap the one blip on the radar, the New Orleans Saints, with their loss to the Atlanta Falcons. Bob Rosa will join us from Canal Street Chronicles. And then the national football writer for Sports Illustrated, Ross Dellinger, stops by at his typical Monday's time slot. He was in Tuscaloosa, and to get his thoughts about that. There's a coaching change at Arkansas, as Chad Morris just could never get it done for the Razorbacks, and all kind of happenings. It'll be interesting to see where, you know, how far does Alabama drop in the college football playoff committee spot. Penn State out after row the boat. Minnesota, how about the Fighting PJ Flex getting it done? But nothing. It was the most watched college football game of the year by far. LSU-Bama tipping the scales at 16, over 16 million at one point in time, and boy, did the game ever live up to the billing. Congratulations to LSU. Alabama fought valiantly. They don't roll over and die. You got to kill them to win. You just do. And LSU finally exercised their demons with a 46-41 win. We do it every day at this time of day. Let's take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. Mr. Domain, if you don't mind, sir.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
I get a text message from my boy CD on a Saturday night saying, beware, because it's taken 8 years. We're going to do something special about this game, and it was so nice. We're going to play it twice. We're going to play it at the end of the program, and just in case you just missed it, kind of sums up the entirety of the LSU win over Alabama. Well done by you, sir, and I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, Jordy, and my goodness, it is a great Monday to have LSU finally get the win. And you know what? I thought about something not long after Under the Dome went off air at 12:30. Because you know what happened 16 years ago on November the 9th, Jordy? I think you know all too well what happened that night.
16 years ago, November the 9th. I tell you what, rekindle my memory for me.
Jordy, how can you not remember it? It's probably one of the most iconic plays in LSU football history. The Blue Grass Miracle over Kentucky.
Oh, my goodness.
On November the 9th, 2003, fast forward 16 years later. You didn't need any miracle. LSU looked dominant. It may, maybe November 9th may be the greatest day in the history of LSU sports.
That's great. I did not know that. But let me share a story about that, because I was there on the field. I was doing all the radio and all that and doing Nick Saban's coach's show. Of course, he was the coach. And LSU pulled off the miracle. The play, LSU was going crazy. Nick Saban, I've never seen him more furious in my life. I couldn't believe. I said, "What are you? Why are you so upset? What's wrong?" He said, "We just got lucky. Shouldn't have won the game. Shouldn't have gotten to that point." It just kind of sums it all up. I mean, Orgeron wears his emotions on his sleeve, and he's happy. He's crying after the game. And Nick Saban's ticked off, even in wins. So I love Nick to death. He's the best in the business until somebody breaks his records and surpasses what he's done. But, God, it's got to be a lot more fun playing for Ed Orgeron.
It's got to be a ton more fun playing for Ed Orgeron, man, from Louisiana. The guy, this is his dream job. And I said it on Saturday, Jordy, you have to pretty much consider Ed Ogeron, and this is a big wrestling reference, is Dusty Rhodes was the American Dream. Ed Ogeron, without a doubt, is the Louisiana Dream, and he's getting this state back to national title contention, and it's wonderful.
You know, you mentioned that, and I've got to say, you know, it's the story of three, and it's a great lesson to be learned for anyone in any walk of life at any age. It's how do you recover from failure? You know, Abraham Lincoln failed 11 times in his life, and on his 12th attempt, he became the president of the United States. Think back to Ed Orgeron at Ole Miss. He was scoffed and laughed at, and no one ever thought he'd ever get a head coaching job again. And when he got hired by LSU, the skeptics were out by the multitudes. Look where he is, because he never stopped believing in himself. Look at Joe Burrow. You know, he can't win the job at Ohio State for whatever reason may be. Boy, his redemption and his belief in himself and getting with the right coach and the right system. Look, he's going to be the Heisman Trophy winner. And then the little engine that could, 5'7", Clyde Edwards-Helaire, an afterthought in the recruiting ranks. No one expects. All these freshmen are coming in and go, oh, my gosh, all these 4 and 5 stars, they're going to be the running backs. And in the biggest games of the year, he had 33 touches against Auburn. He had 29 touches against Alabama. Clyde Edwards-Helaire never stopped believing in himself. So all you kids out there, anybody, don't give up. Don't stop believing in yourself. You keep working hard, and good things are going to happen. It's a great redemptive story for three of the key elements to the win over Alabama.
It was just absolutely amazing. And I had the fact that, as I mentioned in the two-minute drill, Joe Burrow and Clyde Edwards-Helaire both named co-SEC Offensive Player of the Week. That was the most impressive thing for me, was to see not just Joe Burrow do the Joe Burrow things we expect him to do in this ball game, but also Clyde Edwards-Helaire. The guy is a pinball. That spin move he was putting on, that it was a masterpiece, and I feel like maybe his draft stock in terms of Clyde Edwards-Helaire all the way up.
Oh, my God. He just made some serious money off of that game. And as we talk with Billy Embody in hour number one, if you missed our interview with Billy and Brooks Cabina, it'll all be on 1037thegame.com on demand. So just go Google it after the show and look it up. But, yeah, he's just he earned himself a ton of money and a ton of respect. And LSU football fans will not soon forget his efforts on a record-setting night when the dragon was slayed.
The dragon was slayed, Jordy. But, of course, there's a lot of other things going on, especially in the NFL. It was a wild, wild weekend in the NFL. Obviously, the Saints lost. I know you talked with Bob Rose about it in just a little bit. Yeah. But we also got to bring up the fact that the Colts lost to the Dolphins. The Dolphins are winners of two straight, Jordy. What the hell is going on out here?
I know what it is.
What's that?
The Dolphins want other teams to... They want other teams to get ahead of them because they're going to draft Joe Burrow. You see, everybody's talking about Justin Herbert, and they're talking about Tua Tagovailoa, and Tagovailoa was a warrior. Hey, that boy can play. But the Dolphins setting themselves up for Joey Burrow. I'm telling you, watch out.
Who's this Tua Tagovailoa guy? Last I heard, Jordy, he was Tua turned the ball over.
Yeah, that turnover early on set the tone for the entirety of the game. If they go and score on that, look out. But look, he can still sling it. He's still pretty darn good. And Alabama, that running back, Najee Harris, is a stud. They got players all over the field as well. Just goes to show you what a special team this LSU football team is. And they just got to take care of business against Ole Miss. Ole Miss, this is going to be kind of the Atlanta Falcons. It's very similar to the Falcons. Nobody's given the Falcons a chance against the Saints. Nobody's given Ole Miss a chance. It would make their year to beat LSU. LSU coming off a physical, emotional game. But this is where the leadership of Burrow and Cushenberry and all these other guys come into play. A special season. You can't have a slip-up, and I don't foresee one.
I don't foresee one either, Jordy. And you brought it up perfectly. It's a lot like what we saw over the weekend with the Atlanta Falcons and the Saints' loss. You can say the same about the Raging Cajuns. They just came off a huge win over Coastal Carolina on the road, national television. They're getting ready for a game against a very similar, very, very bad team in South Alabama. It's going to be interesting to see what happens this weekend with those two programs that we cover here frequently here on 103.7 The Game, because of the fact that they're playing teams that are below kind of the pay grade, if you will. If you just look at how the tiers set up in the Sun Belt and the SEC, how things turn out and how motivated both teams are going to be to get the dub.
Well, that, the case is, though, they can't afford another loss. They got to keep winning so they can get to that prize, and that's another trip, possibly staying at home for the Sun Belt Conference Championship. LSU's not going to be in the spotlight after this. They're not, you know, Ole Miss, Arkansas is awful, and then Texas A&M. None of them in the national consideration. So the spotlight will be on other teams. So LSU's got to have to play well. They got to keep putting up big numbers so they maintain their position. They keep winning till they can get to the SEC championship game where they'll play a really good Georgia team. So lots still to be done, man. Lots still to be done. But what a special. And the Saints always have a hiccup. Always, every year, they're okay. I'm just glad the Packers beat the Panthers in the snow at Lambeau. Glad they did that. Still got a two-game lead there. We got to pull for Seattle tonight, right? To beat San Francisco, and then the Saints have to beat the 49ers at home so they can get home field advantage. That's the key. That is the key. So everybody, put on your Seahawk hats and let's pull for Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll and the Hawks, please.
Exactly, Jordy. It's huge for this team. You can definitely get to say if Russell Wilson and company get the win, that winds up helping Russell Wilson's MVP chances, because I think a win over that kind of team would be amazing. But also, Jordy, we brought the fact the Saints lost, but guess what? The Cowboys did too, and that felt twice as nice.
Yeah, boy. Yeah, they lost at home. I'm telling you, Coach Garrett, he gone. He's done. After this year, he is done. Book it. And book the fact that Hot Topics is always brought to you by Cajun Chef Hot Sauce, the best hot sauce on the planet, the Biart family for 9 decades, approaching 9 decades, 90 years. Finest spices, finest peppers. Man, do yourself a flavor. Get some hot sauce. Get it Cajun Chef style, because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef Hot Sauce on it. All right, we'll bring up the one bad thing, the dirty words, the Falcons 26-9 winners over the Saints. Bob Rose will chronicle it next here on the Jordy Helper Show.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you're locked into the Jordy Helper Show on 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
It's all execution, and again, it's not some grand mind-boggling action. It's just little things here and there that put yourself into a better position to convert a third down or make a big play, create scoring opportunities. So that's really what it is. And I'm sure. I mean, I can't think where, man, if we just make that play, it's a totally different game.
Drew Brees, after a 26-9 shocking loss to the Atlanta Falcons in which he was sacked 6 times and the Saints were held to not even a touchdown, just 3 field goals as the Falcons ended their 6-game slide with a 26-9 win over the Saints on Sunday that ended New Orleans' 6-game winning streak. Bob Rose was in attendance for representing Canal Street Chronicles and having a good time in the Crescent City. But, Bob, man, I guess every year the Saints or teams lay an egg, and hopefully that will be the lone egg that the Saints lay this year.
Oh, gosh, Jordy, let's hope so. And the 26-9 to the Atlanta Falcons sounds so much worse to hear you say it than it was to be in attendance. Saints fans, I wouldn't be too worried about the overall outlook for this team for the rest of the season. They are still one of the more balanced teams on both sides of the ball in the entire NFL. Excuse me. They just clearly had a very off day yesterday. And they got beat how they have been beating everybody this season. They got beat physically on both sides of the ball. in the trenches. How often, and you alluded to it, how often can you say Drew Brees has been sacked six times in a game? It's rare that we have to say Drew Brees has been pressured six times in a game. That offensive line, give all the credit in the world to the Atlanta defensive line. We knew that they had talent there, but they had been manhandled most of the season. And the Saints, who had been manhandling teams most of the season, just didn't get the job done. And you know, it was very similar on the defensive side of the ball. Nobody has been able to run against the New Orleans Saints defense in really almost 2 years, like we have seen Atlanta pull off yesterday. And you know, give credit to their offensive game plan. You know, they ran a lot of misdirections early on, which seemed to spread the Saints' front seven, defensive line and linebacking core from sideline to sideline. And then they just ran the ball right at them, and New Orleans couldn't stop it. It was a very frustrating game to watch, and I imagine even more so to play for these young men in the Saints uniforms.
Seven sacks total for the season leading into the game, and the Falcons get six. I hate to say it, but my boy Will Clapp, the former LSU Tiger, was struggling out there. I mean, that's, Andres Pete goes down, they shift people around, and he just had a tough go of it. Anyway, it is what it is, right? You got to bounce back and get ready to go. You got to play him again later on in the year as you, you got to go to Atlanta, and, you got to go play. Carolina's coming up, so this is far from over. But golly, they just at home. I mean, have the Saints ever not scored a touchdown at home since Drew Brees has been the quarterback? I know they only got four field goals at Dallas, but since Drew Brees, I can't recall a game where they didn't score a touchdown at home.
No, I I'd have to double check that statistic as well. But I believe that I heard someone allude to that exact statistic yesterday or last evening. Was that this was the first time a Drew Brees, Sean Payton led team has not scored a touchdown at home? And you know they drove the ball early, especially their first drive. And then when Alvin Kamara slipped on that misdirection out of the backfield on third and short. Where they had to line up, you know, for a Will Lutz field goal. That was just kind of a microcosm of how the rest of the day was going to go. And again, I don't see this being a long-term problem, for the Saints. They aren't a perfect team, obviously. You and I have outlined some areas of concern, mainly a reliable target outside of Michael Thomas in the passing game. You pointed out how Will Clapp struggled yesterday, but Andres Pete was having a rough day before he left the game with an arm injury too. And that interior line in general, Eric McCoy was, I'd say, okay at best, but Larry Warford struggled in pass protection at the right guard spot, and Teron Armstead, let's just say we've seen him have better days. It was just a bad day at the office for the Saints front line offensively, and that had a trickle-down effect through the rest of the offense.
And Bob Rose of Canal Street Chronicles, Sean Payton loves balance. They threw it 46 times. They only ran it 11. Granted, they were behind in the score, but Kamara and Murray combined for 9 carries and 36 yards. That's not the recipe for success, and you made a point of it. Atlanta ran it 34 times for $143. They controlled the clock. They controlled the game.
Yeah, they really did. They out New Orleans the Saints. And the statistic that you just pointed out about the rushing attempts that Kamara and Latavius Murray had, I consider that just as shocking a statistic as the six sacks of Drew Brees. The 26-9 score made it, well, the Falcons did win handily, but the final score indicated that the Falcons won handily, obviously. But there was zero reason at all to abandon a balanced game plan, in my opinion, for Sean Payton and Pete Carmichael's during the course of the game. Yet that's exactly what they did. They seemed to come out and, during their six-game winning streak, even with Bridgewater at quarterback, if you look at the first half trends of most of those five games when Teddy was behind center, the Saints had more passing attempts. They leaned more towards the pass in the first half. But then coming out in the second half, they really established the physicality along the front and in the running game, be it you know, with Murray at running back or Kamara at running back. And they just didn't do that yesterday. It, like you said, it looked like they came out of the locker room in the second half where almost with a shrug of the shoulder saying, wow, we're not going to run the ball today. Drew, let's go win it. And they didn't.
Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles. Up next, the Saints travel to Tampa to take on the Buccaneers. And tonight we got to be the biggest fans of the Seattle Seahawks, right? Seattle versus the San Francisco 49ers. Niners got to lose eventually. Hopefully it's tonight.
Yeah, yeah, and we're going to find out a lot about the San Francisco 49ers tonight. You know, kudos to them for the outstanding schedule or outstanding record that they have coming into this game. But you look on paper, and they really haven't played anybody, at least in comparison to, say, the Saints or the Seahawks or some of the other NFC top contenders. So we're going to find out a lot about San Francisco, and, you know, like you said, you know, if you're looking at the overall race down the road for the number one seed and a first-round playoff bye, San Francisco's already got a couple games up on New Orleans. Yeah, they play each other, which you know is going to be a very huge head-to-head matchup. But the Saints have to make up a little bit of ground in the standings on the 49ers. So, yeah, I'm with you. Go Russell Wilson. Go Seahawks tonight.
Yeah. Oh, Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles. We'll talk next week. But you were in the dome. Were people still buzzing about LSU's win over Bama?
Yeah, they were. You know, we were. We had some. My fiance Lauren and I had some great seats down right towards the field. And in the pregame buzz, you could feel it. Obviously, there was excitement about you know Saints Falcons and just the Saints game in general, as there always is. But everybody on the walk to the dome, in the dome, and even afterward, there was nothing but talk about the LSU Tigers and particularly Joe Burrow, who if he's not the front runner for Heisman Trophy, then they should do away with the award.
He is the front runner. It's his to lose. Bob Rose, we'll see how the Saints bounce back from adversity. We always appreciate your time, buddy, and I'm glad you had a good time in my hometown of the Crescent City. Thanks again.
Thank you, my friend. Always a pleasure.
All right, Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles. We'll get back to the college scene next. Ross Dellinger, lead college writer for Sports Illustrated here on the Jordy Helfrich Show.
League. NBA scoreboard, a couple of good matchups tonight. 6-3 Dallas at 7-1
Here's three pieces of advice to live by. Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
And we welcome you back over the weekend. What a college football weekend it was. We had a dragon slaying. We had another row, row, row the boats. And we had a Kushan delay in Fayetteville. The lead writer of college football for Sports Illustrated was in Tuscaloosa for the big battle. And that's, of course, Ross Dellinger, who joins us each and every Monday at this time here on the Jordy Helfrich Show. Ross, what a scene it was. It seemed like years, and it was years and years of pent-up frustration was finally released, and LSU exercised its demons. How are you, buddy?
Good, Jordy. Yeah, you know, it's been covered a lot of big games, and I'm not sure I've ever seen a post-game on-field celebration, especially in a road game quite like that one. It was pretty obvious that LSU coaches and administrators, even some players and families and everything, were expelling their frustrations on the field in Tuscaloosa. It was pretty wild.
It was, you know, I talked about this earlier, but your thoughts. I mean, think about the three key components to the game for LSU. A coach who failed miserably at Ole Miss and never gave up on himself, got another opportunity, and now he's flourishing. A quarterback who had to transfer from one school because he couldn't play there. Now he's going to, in all likelihood, win a Heisman Trophy. And then a 5'7" kid who nobody even paid attention to comes up with the game of his life, and just it was phenomenal in Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I guess the moral of the story is don't stop believing.
Yeah, you know, LSU is, I think, arguably the best story in college football because of all those things. You know, they have all the most incredible underdog-type storylines, improbable-type storylines, you know, and those three are obviously the three biggest, but, you know, I even think there's other things around that team, and especially decisions that head coach made over the years here that kind of have LSU in the position that they're in, which is, you know, number one in the nation and in the SEC championship game, and very likely the if everything goes as it should, the number one seed in the playoffs.
And if not the Heisman Trophy winner, I don't know what you have to do to win it.
Correct. Yeah, I don't think that's even a question anymore. You know, unless something just incredible happens over the next few games with Justin Fields up there, and you know, Burrow would have to just have something. You know, he would have to have some terrible games. They have to, right. They'd have to get shocked. You know, and lose to a team or two for it not to happen. So everything is kind of pointing in that direction that LSU will have its, you know, first Heisman Trophy winner in 60 years.
Ed Orgeron, we're talking with Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated. Such a dichotomy of his way about doing things and Nick Saban's way about doing things. And look, Alabama, you can't – they never give up. They're always in the game. They're always going to battle you to the very end, and that's a testament to Saban and the way he does. But, boy, it sure looks like it's a lot more fun playing for Coach O. This does.
Yeah, you know, if you saw the – the post-game video leak out from a LSU football player of Coach O in the locker room, yes, there after that win, you'll yes, see a guy who probably is a lot of fun to play for and kids want to play for because he's kind of, you know, he does have the persona of the one of us type deal, and especially if you're from Louisiana, which, you know, more than half of those kids are, and it looks like they're having quite a good time over there right now.
I want the T-shirt, and I'm sure you want the T-shirt as well. Roll Tide, what? Yeah. Anyway, and I can't certainly say what happened after that, but interesting to say the least. What does this do to Alabama? They dropped to number four in the AP poll, correct? What do you think is on the minds of the playoff committee?
Yeah, that should be interesting tomorrow. You know, that's kind of a big question going into the playoff committee's rankings being released tomorrow is, where will Alabama be? You know, will it be four? Will it be five? Will it be six, seven? You know, we have an SI top 10, and we've got Alabama at number five. I ended up putting Minnesota at four, but here's the thing, you know, and this was the toughest week to vote. This is the toughest week really, as far as voting for me. Here's the thing though, you know, everything's going to get sorted out, you know, after the championship games, and even before the championship games, we're going to have a lot of answers and things are going to get a little more sorted out. But right now there's a pretty jumbled mess between, you know, the fourth and the ninth teams in college football right now. And then, you know, it's hard to determine that group of, you know, four, five, six teams in order.
Yeah, it's Alabama. It's, LSU, Ohio State, Clemson, I've got to believe, are going to be 1, 2, 3. And LSU, because of their resume, when they played them, they'd beaten four top 10 ranked teams. But after that, you've got Alabama, Oregon, you've got Oklahoma, you've got Minnesota. How about the Row the Boats? I mean, I know they got some tough games ahead of them, but what a great story of P.J. Fleck and Minnesota getting it done against Penn State. Great story.
It is. It is a good story. Same thing at, you know, Baylor's obviously one of those teams, too, in that mix. It's a good story going on down there at Waco with Matt Rhule. Those two programs, probably a lot of people, you know, kind of kept waiting or have kept waiting for them to lose, and they haven't lost yet. And there's some tough games coming up for them, of course. Baylor will host Oklahoma this weekend, and then they'll host Texas. Like you mentioned, you know, Minnesota has to go on the road, I believe, to Iowa this weekend. That's going to be a tough game. And then they'll obviously have, Ohio State potentially, and have Wisconsin, I think, to end the regular season. So it is really, it's hard again to see any of those to Baylor or Minnesota going undefeated in the regular season with that schedule. But we've been waiting all year for them to lose, and they haven't lost yet. So there's some good stories out there.
Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated. Back to LSU. Tell me what you know about these contract talks with a young 30-year-old coach by the name of Joe Brady, who might get his salary bumped up by as many as three times what he's making now.
Well, you know, I think it's, first of all, you know, it's in the middle of the season, so it's kind of early for this to be happening. Although sometimes these things do happen during the season, especially in this situation. You know, we got to watch out on how we word things. I'll be honest, I don't know how much negotiations, quote unquote, are going on. I do know that LSU has a plan, you know, and it's a process going on right now to keep Joe Brady, and they'll pay whatever they need to pay, you know, to keep him. And I'm sure he'll have or has had suitors potentially even from the next level. They've got a plan there, I think, and they've discussed it. I think there have been discussions with Joe about the plan and the potential in keeping him in his future for sure. That's there. That's going on, and I think LSU is gonna open up the checkbook just like they did with Dave Aranda.
Be foolish not to, because if you don't, maybe that guy up in Tuscaloosa makes an offer that Joe Brady can't refuse. I'm just saying, you never know. You just never know. He was impressed and was very impressive, and the job that he and Steve Ensminger have done coexisting together is quite remarkable. Well, Ross, where are you off to this weekend? What's the big game that coming up?
Well, I'm taking it easy, and I'm gonna be home this weekend because the next. The next month or two are going to be pretty crazy with travel. So I'll be staying home. Then probably we'll go up to Ohio State to watch Ohio State, Penn State. And then potentially back down to Baton Rouge for the A&M game, potentially. Not sure of those plans yet, but I'll be on the couch for this weekend at least.
Good for you. Well, we appreciate you taking some time off to join us yet again. We'll talk to you next week, buddy. Have a great week.
All right, Jordan. See you.
Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated. We'll be back. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game, 103.7 The Game.
All the best guests join the Jordy Helfrich Show. If you missed an interview, you can check it out on demand at 1037thegame.com. Now, back to the show.
Oh, the holiday season's right around the corner, so it's time to get in the spirit. And Delta Media has you covered with Louisiana's Christmas Channel. Make sure to download the free mobile app today on your iPhone or Android to make sure you have all the Christmas music you need right at your fingertips. You can also listen live right now or after the show at LouisianaChristmasChannel.com. Enjoy all the great Christmas music whenever the spirit of the season hits you. That's right. 'Tis the season to be jolly. Fa-la-la-la-la, and no one's more jolly than LSU fans. Don't forget about D.C.'s Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson-Cecilia exit in Brobridge. Everything you need for everyday needs. That's true soul food deli. The best in the business with the best cheeseburger ever. D.C.'s Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson-Cecilia exit in Brobridge. The Raging Cajuns basketball team back in action tomorrow as they take on TCU in Fort Worth. That's a big game against a good team that's well-coached. So a big game, 7 p.m. tip-off. The game's available on Fox Sports Southwest, in case you can find that on your television screen. So, again, what a weekend it was. What a game it was for LSU. 46-41, scored more points against Bama at Bryant-Denny Stadium than any team in a regular season game or whatever, in a regulation game since 1907. Burrow, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, SEC Offensive Players of the Week. Burrow, front runner by a large margin for the Heisman Trophy. LSU number one in both the media and the coaches' polls. They'll be number one in the College Football Playoff Committee poll that comes out tomorrow night. They're the best team in college football. They're the best story in college football. And Coach O is the best story as a coach in college football. Did he make you proud that he's your coach? He talked about the great state of Louisiana. It's not about him. It's about his players, and it's about the state. It's about the fans. It's awesome. It was an awesome night. So many people still euphoric over it. Now, the team has to flip the script, flip the page, move on. Next chapter, the Ole Miss Rebels. So we thought, and we played it once. It was so nice, I got to play it twice. Clint Domain spent a lot of time on this. It kind of sums up the story of the game. We've got the thoughts before the game. We've got the big moments, the big plays, and there was a plethora of them throughout the ball game, time after time after time. And Alabama, unwavering, never gave up, always battling back. You just got to beat them because they're not going to give up. They're not going to die. You got to beat them. And LSU did. Took a full 60 minutes, but the Tigers did it. And because of that, now 9-0 with bigger fish to fry down the road. But this kind of sums it all up. The pre, the during, and the post of LSU's biggest win in many a year, 46-41. Have a great rest of your evening. Come on back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4, same great station, 103.7 The Game. I'm Jordy Helfrich. Enjoy the recap of the Tigers' win.
We're coming. We're coming. And we ain't backing down.
Never look back, no, never say die. Always attack with the warrior cry. Never look back, no, never retreat. Never look back, never say defeat.
Choose whatever poll you would like. The AP, the coaches, or the College Football Committee playoff rankings. Suffice to say, today's game features the two best teams and some of the finest coaches and players in all of the land. Both come in 8-0 on the season. Alabama 5-0 in the SEC, while LSU stands with a 4-0 conference mark. Division, conference, and national title implications on the line once again. Snap back to Tagovailoa. He's going to have to run for it to the right side of the field. Lost the football. Going to be picked up by the Tigers at the 9-yard line. Big turnover by the Crimson Tide. Ray Thornton falls on it. He secures the football for LSU in Alabama. Their opening drive with so much promise is thwarted with a turnover. Burrow throwing. Far side and going to be grabbed by Chase at about the 3. He'll step into the end zone by his lonesome. Touchdown, Tigers! That time on coverage for Alabama was Trayvon Diggs. He saw the football but then kind of stumbled, fell out of the way, and Jamar Chase just went up, pulled it down. He goes into the end zone untouched. We'll set up third down and about 3 here for LSU, and they immediately hop up. Lloyd Cushenberry puts his nose over the football. They're trying to convert on 3rd and 2. Justin Jefferson in the backfield with Burrow. He's looking to throw as a man wide open at the 20. Racing into the end zone. Terrace Marshall left wide open. Nobody had him. Round around the 15-yard line. He made the catch, looked around, said, I'm by my lonesome, and I'll take it out in for the score. Third down, goal to go from the one. Caught Edwards-Helaire with a handoff. Goes airborne into the end zone. Touchdown, Tigers! Burrow came into today's game on the season with a very impressive 2,800 yards. Here's an interception on first down and 10, taken at the 42-yard line by Patrick Queen. Queen down the far side hash, going to be stood up at the 25-yard line. Flags come out everywhere after the play is halted. Tungavailoa on first down and 10 came out through towards the far side hash, and Queen, really the only person in the vicinity, almost seemed shocked the ball was bearing down on him, but he holds on and picks off Tungavailoa, just his third interception offered up this year. It'll be first down and 10. Ball placed at the Alabama 13-yard line with 11 seconds to go in the second quarter. Burrow in the shotgun. Clyde Edwards-Helaire on a wing to his left. Burrow looking left. Delivers the football. Clyde Edwards-Helaire got in the left corner. Touchdown, Tigers! First down, pass play, score! Ball just inside the 7-yard line. First down, goal to go for the Fighting Tigers. Snap to Burrow. Hand to Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Goes near side. Stiff arms a man. Gets to the five. Breaks through. Stays upright. Into the end zone. Touchdown, Tigers! Clyde Edwards-Helaire wanted it more than anybody in crimson and white. And he drove the Crimson Tide into the end zone to make it 45-34, Fighting Tigers of LSU. Burrow under center. Takes the snap. Takes the knee, and the LSU Fighting Tigers come to Tuscaloosa, and for the first time in 8 seasons, hand Nick Saban and the Alabama Crimson Tide a loss here at Bryant-Denny. Coach Ed Ogeron said a couple of years ago, the Tigers were coming. Today, they arrive.
Watch, but what was this one like to coach?
You know what? It's a great game to be in, a great rivalry. I am so happy for the state of Louisiana and all the LSU fans and our football team and our coaching staff. They worked very hard for this victory. It's a much-deserved victory for our football team and our great state of Louisiana and our great university in LSU. Moment, man. Let's go. Right here in the middle of the field. Let's bring it down. Tigers on three, baby. Because this is our house from now on.
Yes, sir.
Tigers on three. One, two, three.
Tigers!